If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
This month is National Marijuana Awareness Month, and I want to talk about where the law regarding marijuana, is going in Illinois and nationally. And I have an expert in the field. Michael Freilich is a senior counsel at Taft Law here in Chicago. He gives advice and counseling in all aspects of medical and recreational cannabis law, including applications for businesses, acquiring properties, negotiating terms of investment, etc. And he teaches on this issue. Thank you so much for joining us, Michael. Welcome to the show.
Happy to be here.
So let's talk a little bit about Marijuana 101. It's legal here, both medically and recreationally, but can you give us a few statistics about other states and where other states are nationally on the issue?
Sure. Generally speaking, it's pretty ubiquitous at this point. Well, let me back up. First, from my side of the field, we call it cannabis as opposed to marijuana. Marijuana is a dirty word, quote unquote, that allegedly has some racist roots. So we'll generally call it cannabis in the industry.
Okay.
Or hemp. But, it is what it is. As far as the number of states that have medical or recreational, kind of depends on how you define medical, but we'll say 40 have a medical market that is pretty robust. It allows for fully leaded, we'll put that in finger quotations, THC containing cannabis. And then if you include the THC, low THC CBD only states, we're almost at 50. We're at 47 if I count correctly as far as medical. On the recreational side, we're just under half. Last time I checked, it was 24 states had a recreational or adult use program. And that doesn't include the hemp side, which obviously is national and sort of it fills in the gaps, let's say.
Tell me, we were just listening to our news reporter talk about the fact that our mayor vetoed a law in Chicago proposed to ban certain intoxicating hemp products. How are you distinguishing between hemp and cannabis? Or is that a subset?
Hemp is a legal definition that was created by the 2018, I think, Farm Bill, which basically took a legal definition and applied it to a plant. And it said if it has a small percentage of THC in it, then we can call it hemp and you can sell it as if it were any other agricultural product. Cannabis, the stuff that you would go to a cannabis dispensary for, is the federally illegal version. It has THC contents, from 20% to 30%, exceedingly high. It is, as I said already, it's federally illegal. But I think the important point that I'm sort of trying to make here is that the distinction is not one that a plant would know. It is not anything that a botanist would go, oh, of course. It's a legal distinction that is simply based on the amount of THC that the plant produces. And the way it was originally drafted was drafted, the farm bill, the hemp bill, was drafted pretty poorly. And that's sort of what opened the door to all this intoxicating hemp and the CBD products and so on and so forth. I think when the farm bill came around, most people were expecting that you would have hemp as in, cloth products and paper, and then you'd have some CBD products. I don't think anybody really intended for Delta 8 or for even regular THC to be out there hemp derived and sold in gas stations. But that was what the bill was designed to do, was to sort of cut down on the hemp derived cannabis products, marijuana products, again, finger quotations, that you could walk into a gas station and would get you just as intoxicated as the stuff that you needed to go into a dispensary to buy.
I see.
But it was just where it came from.
So marijuana, cannabis, is illegal federally. So I don't know if there are any other areas of the law where you have states that are saying it's okay under certain circumstances to do something, but the federal government still says it's illegal. Does that mean that the federal government could come in conceivably, not saying they're going to, but could conceivably come in to a dispensary in downtown Chicago and arrest everyone there for selling drugs?
So, yes, theoretically, yes, that could happen any time of any day. And, you know, it is something that I sort of legally, you know, ethically obligated to remind people that come into my office and want to talk about cannabis. I have to remind them of that. Is that likely? No. Is there anything out there at the moment that says that won't happen? No. Has there been in the past? Yes, kind of. In the past, when we had President Obama in office, there was a series of memoranda that came out of the Justice Department, colloquially known as the Cole Memoranda. And basically what they said was prosecutorial resources are a limited resource. So we're not going to waste our prosecutorial resources on state compliant cannabis businesses unless they run up against one of these enforcement priorities. And those enforcement priorities were basically the kinds of things that, like, you can't use this as a front for illegal activity, other illegal activity. You can't have guns and drugs. Guns and cannabis don't mix. You can't ship it from one state where it is legal to another. Now, notice I didn't say to another state where it is illegal. Just, you can't ship it from one state to another, period. So as long as you didn't sort of hit up against those or a few, or sell it to kids, that kind of thing, as long as you didn't hit up against one of those sort of enforcement priorities, the federal government was going to leave you alone. And for, you know, also, again, to the extent they're not going to, it's now legal in 48 states in some way or other. So if they were ever going to do an enforcement, you know, action, there would be a lot of upset senators and congresspeople. There would be a lot of upset governors. There would be a lot of upset voters. So it's sort of at this point, it's paper risk. It's possible, but very, very unlikely.
Let's talk a little bit more about that when we come back from our break. We're talking to Michael Frelick. He is senior counsel at Taft Law, and he really devotes his whole practice to giving advice and counseling in all aspects of cannabis law. Very interesting. Ron from Michigan has a question. Can you put Ron on? Great. Hi, Ron. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Trump just about 2 weeks from now, you met. Passed something about marijuana where he's going to decriminalize it or take it out of its most egregious category. Does the councilman know anything about that?
Okay, great. Thank you for the call, Ron. Michael, what do you say?
So what he's talking about is rescheduling cannabis. That started under the, if I recall correctly, started under Biden, had a couple of false starts, and Trump has not shut it down. But basically what it would do is currently cannabis federally, as we talked about, it's federally illegal. It's in the same schedule as other drugs that have no recognized medicinal purpose and a high likelihood of abuse. So like cocaine is not in Schedule One. It's going to be like methamphetamine and LSD and stuff like that. So that's kind of ridiculous, but that's where it's currently scheduled. That causes a lot of business problems for the industry. From not being able to bank real readily to having, frankly, the biggest problem is a tax filing issue, which is probably a little bit too weedsy for this. But the bottom line is it would be scheduled along with other pharmaceuticals. So it would not be legal to go into a gas station and purchase it like, you know, like a Coke or something like that. But it would sort of take some of this, at least the medical side, out of the criminal aspect, would allow these businesses to file much more normal tax returns. But so, yeah, it's a step seemingly in the right direction. But like everything in the cannabis industry, we'll see if it's a blessing in disguise, or if it's a blessing, or if it's, you know, a curse in disguise.
Look, you know, without getting too much, as you say, in the weeds here, what is, you know, banking laws, there are federal banking laws, and, you know, without getting into those laws, how does it work? So a cannabis company wants to start, they need a loan, they need banking relationships. How do the banks get around not violating the federal law when they deal with dispensaries and the growers and that.
Right. So to answer the question as directly as you asked it, they can't. They cannot avoid breaking the law, right? The idea there is and this is why banks kind of get real nervous about this. There's nothing that says the banks cannot loan to a cannabis company, but it does put them at risk. What they've done is by its very definition, they engaged in a financial transaction with ill-gotten gains. So that means they have engaged in money laundering by its very definition. So a bank looking at a cannabis industry client goes, I don't want their money. There is some guidance that the government put out, which says, if you're going to bank cannabis, here's how you do it. But that is guidance. It's not law. It could be revoked at any day. You could be prosecuted with that guidance out there anyways. So what you have is a lot of the bigger banks are just like, it's not worth the money. It's not worth the risk. We're not going to do it. Some of the smaller banks that are not federally smaller banks that are federally insured may be willing to do it, and some of the non-federally insured sort of credit unions may be willing to loan money. But it is hard to get institutional money in the cannabis industry right now. Most of your money is coming from private equity, people, high net worth individuals, that sort of thing, or Canada.
Let me ask you this. Michael, can you give us some perspective on how successful the industry has been in Illinois? Is it generating lots of money, lots of tax money? Can you address that just generally speaking?
Sure. I mean, it depends on a lot. Depends on what are you comparing it to? Does it make a lot in comparison to the lottery? No, but nothing does. Let me check my notes here real quick. I think it's $400 million a year for the last 5-6 years. Where is that? I think we were $9 billion since we've opened. Yes, $400 million annually since 2022. And, we're at $9 billion since we started.
Okay.
$9.2 billion in sales.
Okay.
So we're getting about $400 million in tax dollars per year. So again, that's good. That's real money, right? Again, in comparison to the lottery, it's not, but in comparison to just about anything else, that's $400 million that we weren't getting before. And I tell you what, we were still smoking the same amount of cannabis is my strong suspicion.
And to that point, is there still an illegal market? The answer is yes, but has that illegal market, to your knowledge, if you know, has that kind of diminished because people can go to a nice, bright place with knowledgeable service people and buy their cannabis?
I mean, so it depends on your time frame, right? I'm 50, so from the time when I was in high school, in college, absolutely things have changed. We don't import nearly as much cannabis as we used to from Mexico. You know, great. So there's still an illegal market. It tends to be a gray market. So, you know, we'll get stuff from a state that oversupplied, a Michigan or an Oregon or something like that, that will be sold here black market. And my guess as to why that's still occurring is legal cannabis is expensive, relatively, right? If you're selling illegal cannabis, you don't pay tax on that. You don't have to pay your employees any benefits. You don't have to pay them a living wage. You sure as heck don't have to go get it tested. So, you know, gray market or black market cannabis is significantly cheaper to produce than state-compliant cannabis. But at the same time, when you have state-compliant cannabis, it's nice to know that what you're putting in your lungs doesn't have mycotoxins, mold, pesticides, So, yes, there's still definitely a black market. But I think what you end up getting in the black market is people who are shopping for the price point.
Yes, exactly.
Specifically.
Let's take a caller, Steve, on line 3. Hi, Steve. Welcome to the show. You have a question for Michael?
Oh yes, thank you for taking my call. A quick question about banking the cannabis and whether or not you can use your Visa or MasterCard or debit card today, or is it still cash only? And why is that, Michael?
Thank you for the call.
Credit card companies feel the same way about the cannabis industry as the banks do, right? It's just there's far too much risk involved for them to comfortably bank cannabis when anytime they're taking money from a cannabis company, that is criminally derived funds, they've technically involved themselves in money laundering, so they don't want to do it. Having said that, what is it? Practicality is the mother of all inventions. So a lot of dispensaries have figured out a way where you can use your debit card. So you go in with your Visa debit and you run it as a credit card, as an ATM transaction effectively. But it looks like a credit card as far as the consumer is concerned. They can run their card. They don't have to go in and get cash. So yes, it is still very, very difficult to get credit card processing as a cannabis business, but they have figured out a couple of workarounds.
It seems like kind of like slicing things pretty thin there, if you ask me. But, it's interesting.
I'm with you.
Yeah. Let's do really quickly, because we only have literally like a minute. Can people still get in trouble traveling with marijuana to different countries? And I'm asking this because it's spring break season and people are getting on planes and going to Mexico. And I just want to make sure that people know what the laws are.
Yeah. Legally, you should not be traveling across a single border with cannabis. You shouldn't go across a state line. You should not go across a country line. Brittany Griner, I think that's how you say it, Brittany Griner, the WNBA
yes.
basketball player who ended up in prison in Russia, would tell you it's a bad idea. Don't worry about it. If you really need it, I am sure you can find it there.
Don't bring sand to a beach, as they say, right?
Exactly.
Thank you so much for joining us. I have more questions, and you're going to come back again as the laws change and they morph, and maybe we'll follow this city of Chicago hemp issue. But Michael Frelick, he is with senior counsel at Taft Law. Can you tell people how to get a hold of you if they're interested in hiring a lawyer to deal with the aspects of the law of cannabis?
Sure, I can be reached. Probably the easiest way to get me would be via email at mfrelick, M as in Michael, Froelich, at taftlaw.com. Or you can call me at the office, call the front desk at 312-527-4000 and ask for me, and I'll be happy to speak with you.
Or you can always contact me, and I'll put you in touch with Michael. Thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday.